Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us on the program this week. Our guest is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and we'd love to have your questions for him in the next half an hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. You can email them to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Stan, I'm doing great. We just had our big Thanksgiving pitch-in here at Old Stoney for all the city employees and offices around the building here. So excuse me if the tryptophan starts to to kind of hit me a little bit, but I'm ready to go right now.
Well,
so
let's get to it. We will try not to put you to sleep with our questions. Do you have good cooks there at Old Stoney?
Oh, my gosh, the best. My wife made this pumpkin bread today, and our street superintendent, of all people, brought in a sugar cream pie to die for. So, yes, we are not short on good cooks in the kitchen around here.
All right. Well, let's get right to some of the topics at hand. And I wanted to start about talking about a wall, not the one that's gotten a lot of press over the last year or so, but the wall that you've been talking about. And this is next to what's going to become the new Prairie Creek Park project. You've talked a fair amount about this wall being important. Why do you think it is?
Yeah, so, I mean, I stand by it. There's only one politician who's talked more about a wall in this country than me, and that's our president, Donald J. Trump.
I've been discussing walls
in the downtown now for the past several months, and so now, to correlate our viewers and to put them in context, or our listeners, rather, with where we're at, we are directly north of what will be Nickel Plate Flats on the west side of what will be Prairie Creek Park. And this wall is not a common wall. When the former building, Patrick's Office Supply, started coming down a couple of years ago, city leadership at the time felt it was very important that we maintain control of this property. Because once that building came down, it was going to be a key parcel in our downtown. So the city was able to negotiate with the owner that, number one, if the owner paid all the back taxes, made all the taxes current, took the building down, that then they would donate the property to the city. One thing that we still need to do with this piece of property to ready it for development is to make a nice finish on the westerly wall that is ours. And before we started this project, it was a nasty white unfinished wall that looked like it had just had a building torn down next to it. So we worked with the adjacent property owner, and we worked with KJG Architecture based out of Lafayette, and came up with a good plan to put a good steel support system up so this wall will last for not years but decades. It is secured into the adjacent building, and the adjacent building owner likes the plan because it's going to make that entire situation more resilient to bad weather and things of this nature. So if people come downtown right now, what they're going to see is they're going to see J.R. Kelly, and they are working feverishly they've got the steel support systems up. They're putting a backing material up now. They are putting a fill in between what is the city's wall and the adjacent building property owner's wall to make sure no moisture, snow, or rain can enter, freeze, and expand, and so forth. And here in the next week, the bricklayers will get to work, and we'll have close to 3,400 square feet, I believe, of brick on that wall. And through the middle part of the wall, it'll be broken up with some strips of limestone. The brick color has been chosen to match that of surrounding historical buildings. And I might add that this was all cleared through our Historic Preservation Commission. We don't want to go down a wrong path there, so it was approved by them. That's what's occurring. It will be done by December 31st, and this is really the first step in the building of what will be a state-of-the-art green space in little downtown Frankfort called Prairie Creek Park.
Is it important to you to have some of these little signposts along the way that say, hey, look, we really are making progress. We really are doing some of these things that you've talked about. We really are changing the way that our city looks. Is there symbolic value in addition to just actual aesthetic value in getting these little things done?
The first term, what I've learned is that the first term is all about laying out an agenda, and you grind, and you work so hard to get the fundamental aspects of the city in line. And you and I have talked about that, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse there. But second term is, okay, you've got your capital improvement plan in place, you've got your departments in order, the fundamentals of the city are running. Now it's really time to make some transformational change. And, you know, we were lucky in the first 4 years to get Ivy Tech Community College, to get ConAgra Foods, Wabash National, Indiana Packers. We had some really good wins in the first term. But, you know, these next 4 years, what is now 2 years and 3 months, I'm really hammering on quality of place. I'm tired of people looking at Frankfort as just a great place to work, and then at the end of the day, they drive home to Zionsville or Whitestown or, no offense, Tippecanoe County. I want them to stay here. And so things like this, Nickel Plate Flats, the West Wall at Prairie Creek Park, Prairie Creek Park itself, are dazzling new gateway signs into our downtown that, by the way, are being installed as you and I speak. These things are showing people that movement's happening here. I mean, Greek's Pizzeria, new ice cream parlor on West Clinton Street, the Copper Penny on the north side of the square, which I hear is a wonderful new little boutique, a new women's clothing boutique that's going to be going in right next door to Prairie Creek Park. I mean, watch out. You know, it's going to take us some time, but Frankfort's coming. We're here to play ball, and yes, I believe these things are very symbolic in showing the forward progress of the city.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes today on our program. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Send emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. We've talked on the last couple of programs with you about the removal of your former parks chief and the investigation that's ensued that has been in the hands of the county prosecutor. I wanted to ask you if you've gotten an update. I know that officials from the State Board of Accounts were there earlier this month doing their own investigation. What's the latest you know of?
Sure. So State Board of Accounts began their investigation close to a week and a half to 2 weeks ago now. They are still investigating. They have not concluded their investigation. We have acquiesced to every request they've made of us, any file, any drive, any folder they need. They're getting it. And I can't speak here today if any subpoenas have been given by the SBOA. I assume if that hasn't happened, that's going to happen very soon. And then the facts will come out, and I can't wait to report those facts. But until that time, we're going to let SBOA do their work, and the investigation is still very much underway.
You said you expect subpoenas, multiple or just for Joel Tatum, your former parks chief?
I'm guessing he will be one of them if that hasn't happened already. And if not a subpoena, a call to say, hey, we need you to come in and sit down and just have a chat with us. I assume that's a very logical thing for them to do. They have not told me they were doing that, but that seems very logical in a thorough investigation that would happen. Other than that individual, I'm assuming probably some current parks employees, probably. Not by any means that they knowingly did anything wrong, but they were around the situation when it was occurring. So in order to get a good context of that entire situation and how the department was being ran, I know I certainly would be more than happy to sit down and talk with those individuals. I personally haven't gotten a call or a letter, but I'd be more than happy to do that if I were asked to do so. But at this time, I know of no specific names or official subpoenas that have been given.
The city did its own investigation, and what did you find? Did you find that there's possible other people involved?
Well, our investigation led us to believe that our local control ordinances had been broken. That's what our local investigation showed us. At that time, that triggered the next step in the process, and that was reporting to the Clinton County Prosecutor and the State Board of Accounts in written form. And that's what we did. Now, the documents, the evidence, the audio recordings, the transcripts of our investigation are now very much a part of FBOA's investigation. So I can't comment on them directly, but to say that those documents and that evidence found led us to believe that our internal control ordinances set forth by the City Council of the City of Frankfort had been broken, and therefore it was my responsibility as Chief Executive Officer and our CFO, our Clerk Treasurer, to follow the steps A, B, C, D laid out in the letter of the law and pass these things along to state officials, which is what we did.
I guess what I'm asking is, did your investigation show that there were some number of people other than Mr. Tatum who might have broken those control ordinances?
I have no reason to believe that anyone other than that individual knowingly broke any local control ordinances. Knowingly did so. Now, we will see what the SBOA investigation shows when they conclude. I look forward to seeing what they found. And I can't sit here and say that the individual in question that was terminated knowingly did these things. But what I can say is that individual, along with all city employees, were required to take internal control ordinance training, signed on the dotted line saying they attended internal control training, understood the procedures and the processes we have. I can say that. That's on file. And because of that, and things were still done to break those internal control standards, or in layman's terms, the way we handle money, the way we handle the taxpayers' dollars, the way we handle donations in certain departments, those things were broken. And that is why we felt very incumbent to be transparent, not to sweep it under the rug, but to call it for what it is, approach it, face it head on, report it to the authorities per our city ordinance, and let that process play out.
We as a news organization, and I'm sure this happened with other news organizations too, have received a couple of notices in the last few weeks about executive session or closed door type meetings that have gone on with respect to personnel issues. Can you say whether any of those have been related to this investigation?
All I can say is they have not.
Okay.
All I can say is they have not.
Do you have any word on when the SBOA might issue its report and get that to you?
I do not. All I can say is as they've been asking things, we have been getting it to them immediately, and our HR director, Jack Dodd, already had a binder full of information to give, which I hope aids them in getting this done quicker. You know, we want a resolution. We want to know the findings so that, just like you, we can report those, we can close this chapter, and we can move forward here in our city.
You said those personnel meetings are not related to this case, but this is certainly not the only case that you and I have talked about on this program with respect to removal of people from different positions. Is there going to be more news like that in the offing?
I can't say. I honestly can't say because I don't know. Some of these things are bodies that overlook individuals that I do not have any authority over. Let me put it that way. So, you know, just because an executive session is called, I caution people to assume that it's someone that the mayor of the city of Frankfort directly oversees. It might be someone that a legislative body oversees, because there are those situations at hand. You know, Stan, you and I, we've talked about it before, and the good old boy network does things a certain way. And, you know, things are brushed under the rug because it's very easy to do, and you forget about it, and you keep it out of the public eye. And some of these things have been hard to go through, but you know, I believe from day one that you got to call things for what they are. An organization, things, they do happen. They are incredibly serious when it comes to the people and their money and the individuals that are representing them. And if, you know, if we smell out corruption, if we smell out harassment, if we whatever it might be, I mean, we're going to face it and we're going to tackle it. It might not be the prettiest news headlines, but I want the people to know they're being watched after, and we're going to fight for them. And it might not be pleasant to go through these processes, but the processes are very much needed.
You've said on this program a couple of times that you are fighting against that what you call the old boy network, and that you're trying to root out whatever problems that might have caused. Are these closed door meetings part of that larger rubric of trying to make the city better?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes is our guest today. Call in your questions, 765-496-1999. Send emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. We've got about 10 more minutes to take your questions. I wanted to talk a little bit about the city's desire to retrofit its police department. You and I mentioned this in the program a couple of months ago. You'd budgeted, I think, about $5 million for that, and now there are some estimates that come back. The low end of them are $7 or $7.5 million, you know, 50% more than you had budgeted. So what are you going to do there? Are you going to have to spend more than you'd planned originally?
Well, I question where that initial $5 million came from. I often wonder, did that number derive from the Old Stoney Project? Because if you remember, the Old Stoney Project was, you know, with all the bond issuance costs wrapped in, somewhere in that $4.5 million range. So I'm just wondering if that conversation then evolved into, well, if we can do Old Stoney for $4.5 million, maybe we can do the police station for $4.5 to $5 million. So I'm not quite sold that the $5 million number was a scientific number more than an ambiguous number that was correlated with another renovation project that was just carried out in the city. So I really can't stand behind the number of $5 million. What we did was we brought in Browning Day Mullins and Deardorff, and they ran a feasibility study on the department. And what we did was we ran down a needs analysis, not a wish analysis, but a needs analysis. So information technology, the ability to upload body camera data at the blink of an eye, the ability to properly store evidence, which, you know, with different humidities when it comes to different substances, ventilation hoods. Now, when our officers are now dealing with substances like carfentanil, that, you know, just feeling it in the air against your skin can literally cause you to OD. You know, all of these things, you know, we looked at them and we said, okay, we need A through Z. Now we have this square footage of a building, which, let's be honest, it wasn't made to be a police department. It was made to be a post office. What can we do to retrofit our current building and add on to our current building to meet all these needs for the next 25 years? The bond that's being proposed is a 25-year bond, and there's no way I'm going to support it if I find that after 15 years, or I believe after 15 years, that space has run its course and now all of a sudden we need another big expansion. I can sit here today and I can say, based on evidence and research and data, that I believe the proposed project will meet our needs for the next 25 years.
So, but what's it going to cost, though? I mean, how much do you think is the final bill going to be, even if you amortize it over 25 years?
Sure. So the project itself would be $6.9 million. When you add on issuance costs, capitalized interest, etc., it would be a seven and a half million dollar project. That includes retrofitting the current department and an addition of 12,000 square feet, which would include a third story that would be open space that, as our city grows and as we need to add on more police officers, more detectives, more equipment, we have that space within the building to put that there.
So, of course, one of the things that's been talked about is can this space, which you point out was designed as a post office and not as a police department, can this actually be effectively retrofitted to serve your needs for the next 20, 30 years or more? Or would it be better to either build from scratch or look for a new building elsewhere that's got a different sort of footprint? Would it be worth it to think about, even if it takes increasing taxes or something like that, would it be worth it to say how much longevity can we get out of this project if we up the budget, perhaps even significantly from where you are now?
Well, I can tell you we can do this project without increasing taxes and doing this within our existing levy as it pertains to the local income tax public safety fund. And let's think about it. Old Stoney wasn't built to be a city hall. It was built to be a school. But we have utilized the space very well, and it functions very well as a city hall.
Well, right, but let me say this. I've been having discussions with Mayor John Dennis here in West Lafayette about what they're going to do with their city hall space. And it's interesting, but it's kind of an apples and oranges thing, because he points out that you need city hall to do a lot less for citizens now than it needed to do 15, 20, 50 years ago. However, you've pointed out, I think very well, the complexities that are being added to police work in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And so there's a good argument you need the police headquarters to do even more than it used to. So, I mean, might not you need to think of it very, very differently than you thought of the Old Stoney project?
Well, what I can tell you is the first part of that feasibility study with Browning Day, Mullins, and Deerdorf, we looked at several other spaces in the community, and we compared side by side building a new department from scratch, just as you are alluding to, and renovating our existing. And what I can tell you is we looked at, you know, great spaces like the former CVS West, the former CVS East, land that would have been donated to us at the airport. And for multiple reasons, cost being one, location being another, because, you know, I, for one, I want a police department that's centrally located. I want a police department that citizens can walk to. If we have it in the industrial park, people aren't going to be able to access that very easily. Now, you can make the argument that, well, most of the police work nowadays is done in the car. Well, I've been to our police department a lot, where people come in and they get questions answered. They go in and they get gun permits. They go in and they get certain licenses for the golf cart ordinance renewed. So I think there's some value in having a police department centrally located and looking at the square foot cost of building a new building. When you tack on land acquisition at the same time, we would be looking at an exponentially larger project than if we were to retrofit our current space and add on to it in order to accomplish all the needs that we first set down with in that spatial needs analysis, not a wish list, a needs list. We've been able to check all those boxes off and make this site work. And we've been able to build it into our capital improvement plan as such that, yes, it's a chunk of money, and the belt's going to have to be tightened, and we're going to have to keep a really close eye on things. But with our cash flow, with our revenues projected, with having the CIP, with having the local income tax specifically for public safety, we can do this, and it is affordable.
I want to talk a little bit in our last few minutes about some of the things that are going on with your city's utilities as well. We've talked about the need to raise some rates on our last couple of shows. Your utilities are right now renegotiating their contracts with the unions that represent a lot of the employees. And we should say, for instance, that it's common for, say, electricians to be union workers in many, many places. Do you have a sense at all of how those contract discussions are going? Have you gotten any sort of inclination on that?
Well, you know, Stan, being a young whippersnapper here, you know, I haven't been around for decades, but I can tell you this. I would go out on a limb and say here today publicly that I believe these set of union negotiations have gone much better than in years past. And I'll tell you why I think they are. We now have a general manager of our utilities that has corporate-level experience and negotiating experience in Todd Corey that's doing a fine job with this, relating not only with the ratepayers, but with our employees. And I think we have a wonderful resource in Jack Dodd, our human resources director, who we brought on the first of this year. That was a big piece of professionalizing our city. That, you know, he is there to advocate for the employees, but he is also there to make sure this all makes good financial sense and keeps us competitive in terms of not giving too much, but not giving too little. I think the most current electric rate vote in terms of the proposed union contract, gosh, I think there was only one nay vote, I believe, out of all of the electric employees. It was either one nay or was unanimous. My mind is going back and forth. Regardless, it was incredibly small. So that tells me that the negotiations have been going well. The way the Utility Service Board has been carrying them out have been going well, and I greatly attribute that to our GM, Todd Corey, and to our HR director, Jack Dodd.
So obviously the salaries of those people is going to be one thing that's a big factor in your budget, and there was some reporting that Todd Corey says he's trying to come up with an accurate budget going forward. Do you have any sense of what inaccuracies in the past might need to be corrected?
Well, this will be the first budget that Todd's presented, and we actually just passed an ordinance this last city council meeting that states the Utility Service Board must have their 2018 budget to us by no later than December 1st. So we all should be receiving that in the next week. I look forward to going through that and scanning it. Obviously, I know my budget like the back of my hand. I take it with me wherever I go, my capital improvement plan, my reserve numbers, so on and so forth, my fund balances. So I'll be interested in looking through that, asking some hard questions come the next budget hearings and city council meeting, rather, where we'll ask some budget questions. And I look forward to seeing what Todd presents. But until I get that in my hands and I review it, I hesitate to comment on that.
The city's also been operating with one of its water filtration stations shut down recently. Why is that?
I honestly, Stan, I do not know. I'd have to look into that and get back with you on that.
Okay. One last thing about the budget from Todd Corey. I mean, have you gotten a sense that there have been structural budget problems in the past that need to be addressed, that it needs to be done in a different way, for instance, that he can now do it in his first crack at it?
Well, I think one thing that Todd's going to try to do, much like we've done on the city side, is sit down and really put together a good capital improvement plan so needs don't rise up and bite us at the last minute. We need to be planning ahead, years ahead, and planning on how those things are going to be sustained through certain revenue sources. I know that's one thing that Todd is working on. Another department we've talked about would be the electric department, but again, you know, we went through the grueling process of the IURC. Rates had not been adjusted for over a decade, and the last adjustment was a decrease with health care costs and inflation. We simply couldn't keep things going from that standpoint. So I do think those adjustments will help. Right before the city council meeting on Monday night, I asked Todd how it was going from the electric sense, and he said things are really starting to balance out nicely. So I look forward to going through those budgets with Todd and working with him on this process.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll have to leave it there. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you again next month.
Thanks, Dan. You too.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, we will not have a show next week, but we'll be back with Todd Barton of Crawfordsville in 2 weeks. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.